Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. You're tuning to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the latest task force established by the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa aimed at tackling the illicit markets that we find ourselves confronted with in South Africa. We're going to speak to them and get a sense of what the task force has in mind and what they aim to achieve. Then we have a conversation with the team at Standard Bank taking a look at how we are reimagining the shopping experience and the mall experience. We're going to speak to them about that and get a sense of what that looks like today. We also have a conversation with the team at West Wits Mining around the new gold mine that has opened up for the first time in 15 years in Johannesburg. We're going to take a look at that and the prospects it might bring. Then we have a conversation with the team at SAB taking a look at enjoying the festive season responsibly and what they have in mind around that. And then because it is Thursday, we're going to wrap up the show with a small business conversation.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we kick off the show with a sense of how markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by the VIP client manager at Primex BT, Kerabile Nonyana, to take a look at market movements and see if we can make sense of them. Tata Nonyana, lovely having you on the show. As always, thanks so much for taking the time. The Rand, 16 Rand 95. I think that's pretty much all we need to be looking at the moment.
I think if you lived only in South Africa and did not interact with the rest of the world, you'd probably be very happy. And you're trying to find which catalysts that are really driving the currency strength. And I think we've had a lot of good things happen. I mean, GDP prints coming in, and the SARB now targeting and anchoring inflation around 3%, getting off the grey list and improving in the debt credibility of our government. And I think these are the things which are essentially would be driving the Rand. But to be perfectly honest, I don't think they are. What's happening is just for the 5 consecutive days, the dollar is just very weak, and that can be seen in the dollar index. So great for us, great for people earning in rands, bad for people earning offshore, but I think it's just a lot of dollar weakness.
Speaking of that US dollar, tomorrow we have jobs numbers, non-farm payrolls numbers, first time we might actually see some data that could move the market since that US shutdown has ended. What are we expecting will come of those numbers, and is the market kind of trying to anticipate that, and perhaps that's what we're seeing in the dollar so far?
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at the jobless numbers which came today, and there's also the private payrolls data, when you look at the minutiae of the numbers, what you're seeing is there's actually no hiring and there's no firing. So I think truly the government numbers are probably going to show the same thing. So what that really entails is that there's still a lot of confidence in the labor market, or it's unmoved. So do I anticipate that there will be a number tomorrow that's going to be so weak that it gets the Fed to move? No, I do not believe that, because from the private numbers that we're getting, as I said, there's no hiring, there's no firing. But what is really concerning is just the wage growth at the moment, which shows that what might actually filter through into the economy in terms of consumer sentiment and spending might be less going into next year, which might really alert the Fed to think, actually, it's not the labor we must worry about, but the performance of the economy.
What does that performance then do for equity markets? I mean, the US markets at the moment are slightly in the red. Asian markets were a bit of a mixed bunch. South African markets continue to be a bit of a mixed bunch as well, depending on which side of the day resources kind of have at the moment. But what does the expectation of the US market then do for the valuations we're seeing on US stocks and potentially the performance of US stocks?
I think the market is grappling with the fact that reality does not seem like reality. I think when you're taught finance, you're taught that a forward PE, which is lower, means a stock is cheaper, meaning that there's more value to be enhanced. But there's an argument I'm making amongst my colleagues and your one, that I think mean valuations have gone up. And when I look at the forward the forward trailing PEs of the Mag 7, they're the cheapest they've been in 3 years. Yes, value, the forward PEs are sitting at 22 for NVIDIA, which is the second cheapest of the Mag 7. But this is a company that's sitting on a $500 billion forward order book, which means they're sitting on potential revenue already without looking at future prospects of growing revenue. What these Mag 7 are having is actually too much cash on their balance sheets. They're actually stuck without knowing what they're going to do with the cash on their balance sheets. And I think with the culture in the US not distributing cash on balance sheet to shareholders, I think that's what really is affecting what reality is for investors versus what they have been taught.
Yeah, when we look at the local markets, they seem to have no problem returning value to shareholders depending on what it is that the companies are going through. Do we anticipate that this will likely continue going into the new year, understanding that some of these companies would have been able to put themselves in quite a good position with the performances of the markets over this year?
I was doing a calculation and I was looking at the forecasted earnings of the top 40 companies. And we it somehow works out that we also have this magnificent 10 companies. And the majority of them are miners. And what miners are doing right now is that they're so cash accretive at the moment. And they don't mind declaring dividends and declaring special dividends. But what also is quite concerning with miners is, and I learned this from listening to Wayne over the years, he always says, at the top of a commodity cycles, miners usually make bad decisions. So we are, when I look at forward forecasting of earnings, I do anticipate that there's going to be a lot of cash flush a balance sheet next year, specifically the miners, and that's going to be distributed to shareholders. The problem that I'm starting to pick up since November is that investors right now are going ahead of the momentum, meaning they're looking at banks, consumer staples, and basic materials to get ahead of that valuation before the sector rotation. But when I'm looking at the 10-day moving averages of the top 40 companies, what you're still seeing is a lot of money going into platinum and a lot of money going into gold. So even today, when you see a sell-off, it's just temporary.
Yeah, when we talk about rotations, these rotations can happen fairly quickly, as we've seen, depending on what's happening in the markets. And at the moment, yes, as you rightly mentioned, commodities are still finding a lot of favor with investors, and we're nowhere near the top of this market for what many might call an extensive bull run, potentially a bull run that could last us several years. How does that then position the thought process going into 2026?
I think when you look at what has been driving commodity prices, base metals have gone nowhere for the whole year. When you look at aluminium, you look at iron ore, the only one which has really topped out has been copper. But it's been precious metals which have been driving prices of commodities. And the one precious metal has been gold. So everything that's been keeping gold higher, has it changed? I think not, because when you look at implied inflation in the U.S. Fed fund rate, it's sitting between 2.19 and 2.32, meaning it's not far off the 2% that the Fed is looking at keeping inflation around. So does that give them room to keep on cutting rates going into 2026? When you look at the dot plot, they have a lot of space to still cut rates. So lower rates mean that non-interest yielding gold still will have a lot of value. So right now, you'd have to go back to platinum. Platinum, I do not believe it will have the stellar year that it's had, because I just think there were just supply shocks and stockpiling issues which happened in and around May, which caught the autocatalytic converter utility out. And really, that's what drove the price of palladium, rhodium, and platinum going into the end of the year.
Yeah, before I let you go, I want to take a look at an announcement from the team at Brimstone Investments. They sold off some of their Oceana Group stake, some 11.5, almost 12 million shares at around 53 Rand a share, around 630 odd million Rand coming their way. Interesting time to be lightening your exposure to certain assets, especially if we look at the fact that Oceana's latest results pointed to a strong performance. Any thoughts on that?
I think with Oceana's results, it's almost like a commodity play because you get these once-off black swan events. But there's so many interrelated variables that go into the price of stuff like fish oils, and as well as supply of really high expensive mackerel into the European area. So right now, I think valuations have topped out, and I think there are better investments right now on the JSE than being in Oceana, which is really a basic material and a commodity play.
Certainly some interesting developments from the market's perspective. Equity markets performing one way, currencies performing another way, and commodities somewhere in between. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the VIP client manager at Prime XBT, Kiarabuile Nonyana, for joining us to take a look at market movements and what we make of them.
My boy, a father now. Another generation on this farm. Maybe we should expand.
We could leverage the farm.
Had a residential estate. It'll pay itself off easily, so they'll be cared for even when you're gone. If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who will connect you to structured lending solutions for wealth that supports generations to come. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The illicit market has become a significant problem for various sectors and industries in South Africa, so much so that there is a concerted effort to tackle this problem. Some estimates estimate that it accounts for about 10% of the GDP that could be going into the South African economy. And to this extent, the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa has embarked on an initiative with various other partners to establish a task team to deal with these illicit markets. Various task forces, I suppose, at that as well. For more on this, I'm joined on the line by the Chief Executive Officer at the Consumer Goods Council, Zinhle Kikwe, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Zinhle, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with an overview of just the task force mandate and why the Consumer Goods Council felt the need to establish this collectively.
Thank you, Jimmy, for having me in your show, and good afternoon to you and your listeners. So definitely the mandate of the task force is to coordinate cross-sectoral action to disrupt illicit trade network in South Africa, have evidence-driven policy to advocate to our members, for our members, to government, to inform smarter regulation, and also just to support law enforcement agencies and their efforts from through a strategic collaboration work that we do with them, and foster public-private partnership to reduce the proliferation of illicit trade. Because in South Africa, illicit economy has become so much. The illicit financial inflows are really becoming a disruption to our members as well to government, because they're not getting the relevant revenue from a tax perspective.
Zinhle, what are the main areas of focus here? I can imagine no illicit market is a good market to have around, but yeah. In the past, we've seen that some illicit markets, the likes of the tobacco market, the alcohol market, they seem to take a lot more prevalence than other markets. Is there a particular focus here, or is it going to be kind of broadened depending on who's involved?
It's across the board. Illicit is across the board. That's been the biggest finding that we have if we are collaborating with other industry associations in this space. Yes, alcohol and tobacco, as we all know it, apparel and clothing. I mean, everybody knows someone who has bought a Gucci or a Louis Vuitton clothing cheaper than they should have paid. And we had in the past, the Makosa brand owners were complaining about that. Also, toys and gaming, electrical gaming, it's becoming a huge one because it is worse because children are involved now. Children are using these toys that we do not know how they were made and produced because they use different chemicals that are not even allowed in this country. Dairy has issues as well. So it's cut across. And pharmaceutical is another growing sector because, I mean, we have a number of pharmaceutical tablets and medicines and substandard medicines and falsified medicines that are coming into the market, which are life and death issues. So if we are or talking about illicit and counterfeit, these are life and death issues because you do not know how they're made. And in this country, for any product to come through its borders or come through our borders, government needs to know who's the producer, what is in the content and the content of that particular product, and where was it produced. So these are the things that we do not know about, and that's what government really needs to know. And when people do not disclose this information and have a traceable supply chain and visible supply chains, it means that they're not paying taxes, excise taxes. I mean, government cannot do what it needs to do from infrastructure, healthcare, and education.
Now, Zintle, part of the responsibility sits, as you rightly mentioned, with government to ensure that the policies and regulations are in place. But part of it also sits with consumers to ensure that we know what it is we're consuming. We are buying from authentic service providers and legitimate service providers. And part of that is understanding that there needs to be a bit of education that needs to be done around the dangers and the risks of counterfeit and illicit markets, because just because something is cheaper doesn't necessarily mean it is safer.
Definitely. Consumers, I mean, we do not want a state where we are protected and government is just like babying us. We need to take the responsibility, because at the end of the day, our continued support of these illicit markets and buying cheaper, deemed cheaper products, they're not really cheap, because at the end of the day, consumers need to be aware that these individuals or these producers are not paying taxes. They're getting funds that they gain. Then again, they go and support other illicit programs. We have found that they support drugs, human trafficking, and smuggling into this country. Those are the actions that we are supporting. As we continue to buy from these service providers or brand owners and buying this product, because we're thinking, obviously, we as consumers are going to be thinking from our pocket perspective, the economy is really struggling at the moment, there's unemployment, but we continue to support this individual, then we're never going to be able to get out of this. Because if government is not able to get its due taxes that every company in South Africa needs to pay to government, then it can't reignite our economy so that we can create an employment. And my members are not able to then reinvest in this country and create employment. Consumers need to be vigilant. We want consumers to be know what is it that they're buying, who are they buying for. It's a law of this country that you need to know where this product come from. So what we're saying, consumer needs to verify and report. That is our call to action, because we have a campaign that is called Check a Daideng, because we're saying, check what you're buying. Check where is it coming from. Look, is it adhering to the rules of this country?
Zintle, let's take a look at the task force and some of the measures that you'll be putting in place. You've touched on some of them now to say that you would be putting in place the efforts to allow consumers to better report things, but how will the task force then be engaging with these various sectors, various markets, various industries? Will you be reporting to government? Will you be reporting back to the public on these initiatives?
Yes, so we have about 20 industry associations that we are working with, Drinks Federation, the Beer Association of South Africa, SALBA from a wine perspective, SATASA, which is the gaming, BLSA, BUSA, BEFSA, and the National Liquor Traders and others. So we have brought all of these. Why? Because we, from a CGCSA perspective, we are doing the same work. We do a campaign every year. We educate about illicit trade and counterfeit. They are doing the same. So we have said, let's do some shift changing in terms of how we do this, because we are not breaking the back of illicit and counterfeit. Instead, it's getting worse and worse. At the same time, we all go to government and advocate and say there's these challenges that the industry is facing and what is the impact of these challenges, and illicit is a big part of it. But we are not talking in the same voice. We do not have the similar action that we're doing. So with these task forces, that's exactly the same action. We are all talking to the same voice. What we have done, there's about 7 task forces that we have, and in each of these task forces, the industry associations that are let's say in the beer space, we have a drinks association taking the lead on that, and we have on the clothing space, we have the clothing association taking a lead on that. On the gaming pharma, we have a pharma association taking a lead of that, because they understand the environment better. They would be able to, from a technical expertise, because we have to get to that level to say technically what are the real requirements to create a visible value chain, number one. Number two, what are the gaps from a regulatory perspective, and how do we then well-informed government and position it so that the government can understand the struggles that each sector is doing. So what we as CGCA are going to be doing, we're going to be operating as a secretariat where we're making sure that there's coordination, there's action, and there's production of reports and research that are going to be done. We create awareness campaigns collectively, and so that when we do have awareness campaign, we are all speaking on the same thing in the same voice, so that South Africans can understand the gravity of this. So that now, you know, from a business perspective, from a member perspective, we understand that South Africans are going to say, oh, now it's touching at the business pocket, then they are worried about. But that's not the key thing. The key thing is that we as consumers, we all consumers, Jimmy, you're a consumer as well, we continue to buy these brands unknowingly, and the consequences are dire. Children have died. People have died. Someone knows in the beer space, people have indicated that know someone who have passed away or who have been sick because they have consumed illicit alcohol. Because now what these producers doing, they putting ethanol, the levels of it, that is really, really high. That is life-threatening. And that's not what this country does. These industries do not want that. Industry wants a responsible drinking, wants responsible consuming of all of their beverages, if it's an alcohol perspective. So because we know that we want these consumers to be alive for a very long time so that they can continue buying the products and continue being sustainable from an industry perspective.
The responsibility of dealing with illicit markets is a responsibility we all bear, and the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa has taken a bold step to ensuring that we can all speak and work collectively in dealing with these problems. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Chief Executive Officer at the CGCSA, Zinhle Kikwe, for taking us through the latest initiatives from their perspective in establishing a task force to deal with illicit markets.
On the farm, every season brings challenges. Will the rain come? Will the soil deliver enough? But I'm not facing those challenges alone. With Omnia by my side, I receive more than fertilizer. I have access to science, innovative solutions, and people who care about my success.
At Omnia, your best harvest is our greatest achievement. Together we grow more than crops, we grow futures. Contact Omnia today and start growing your future.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. We've just come off the back of Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and if you were in any of the malls over the last couple of days, you would have seen an increase in foot traffic. We've seen some of the mall operators also reporting increases in foot traffic ahead of the festive period. So we thought we'd take a look at the state of malls and what it is that continues to drive them in today's world. I'm joined on the line by the asset manager and general manager at Sandton City, Dimitri Kokinos, to take a look at not only Sandton City's role in the mall space, but also what we can make sense of with regards to the retail environment in general. Dimitri, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with how you're finding operating a mall in today's day and age. I mean, 5 years after the COVID-19 pandemic, surely things aren't the way they used to be. How are things today versus how things have been in the past?
So I think malls in prior times used to be very transactional orientated, and today how we've positioned our portfolio, so within the greater property business in the insurance and asset management business of Standard Bank Group, is more towards a shift from transactional towards intentional, and that being we have to create experiences to bring people to the mall. So what I'm trying to, I guess, illustrate is we have to have the best shop giving the best experience in order for the customer to come to our mall and to feel that they are spending and parting with their cash and making them feel good about it. And so what we've been able to do is we've been able to work with those retailers, and we've been able to say to them, how do you put your best business forward? How do you put your best product range forward, and how do you create an experience that lasts? And so it has actually been very successful. We've traveled this journey in the last 3 years with the retailers, and really we're trying to move towards a lifestyle destination, so combining a little bit of retail, a little bit of leisure, wellness, art, culture, etc.
Dimitri, what kind of influenced this from a consumer perspective? I can imagine a lot of what malls do is respond to consumer demands and what consumers might want, and a part of it is also anticipating what they might not know that they want. What have you been seeing on the consumer side of things in terms of trends that has kind of allowed you to reshape how you see your environment?
So we use data, actually, and the data speaks a lot. So we've been able to see, so, you know, we look through categories and we say, okay, at this point in time, the customer is looking for athleisure, or this point in time, the customer is looking for beauty. And I'm just using those as categories, but what I'm trying to illustrate as an example. And so we've been able to see that, and we've been able to understand that actually what the customer is looking for, well, he's actually looking for, at this point in time, more athleisure. He's actually looking for more beauty, and he's actually, and I say he, but it could be he or she or the children, I'm looking for more leisure. And those are the, that is where we are trying to, at this point in time, to direct the traffic. And that's where you're seeing the growth. So what we've been able to do, and I think if there was a press release last week, but really what we've been doing is taking back space from tenants that are maybe underperforming. So maybe are oversized, and making them the right sizes, and then in that also being able to take this space back and put in new tenants. So we've been able to do that, and at this point in time, in the last 2 years, we've actually put in about 50 new tenants into Sandton City.
Dimitri, let's take a look at outside the mall. And when I say outside, I mean the community around the mall. Malls, in most cases, play quite a critical role in being able to facilitate services to communities, but in also being able to kind of give an indication of the strength of that community from an economic perspective through everything from creating jobs to how much discretionary spend goes through a mall and all of those other factors. Can you perhaps just give us your thoughts around what the role then becomes of malls in today's day and age? I mean, South Africa has quite a few of them, and obviously that role needs to be fit for what they're designed for.
I agree with you. So our malls, as we see them, are significant economic engines, and it's, you know, within our portfolio, and they support thousands of direct and indirect jobs. That's what they do. So they create opportunities for the local entrepreneurs. It stimulates economic activity, and hopefully it stimulates economic activity in the surrounding precincts. And so that's what's happened. And I use Sandton, but, you know, that is where the blossoming offices are happening. And beyond that economic contribution, you know, our malls also play a very important social role. So it's a secure environment. It's accessible. Communities can gather. Families can come here. And it also gives a cultural experience. So those are sort of the things I think that malls do indirectly. And I think if you have to really look at where we are now, so in a period where there's a bit of consumer confidence, which was under pressure and starting to get a little bit better, it really provides stability and consistency and helps uplift communities.
Dimitri, before I let you go, you touched on the fact that malls have the ability to kind of curate experiences and almost create a new journey for consumers to be able to go down. Do you think this is the way that we're going to be seeing malls, or we should be seeing consumers shopping kind of transition into going into the future? Do you think we should be including more than just the transactional elements of visiting a mall?
Absolutely. So I think what you're going to see, and I think we've been able to identify at Sandton and what we're trying to do, is really to make it the multi-use and multi-designed. And that must be to integrate retail, that must be integrate dining, workspaces, wellness, entertainment, etc. It's also about creating curated experiences. And so through that, you know, if you walk through our mall, you'll see an art piece as an example. But at this point in time, and I think really quite relevant, is, you know, at Sandton right now, we are doing the Christmas activation, and it's been called City of Enchantment. At Nelson Mandela Square, we're going to do celebrations of Square, and at Eastgate, we're going to do Candy Cane Lane. So each of these are curated experiences to be able to bring the customer to the specific mall, to spend time in the mall, to linger, and hopefully in doing that, to spend some money.
The evolution of the shopping experience and, by extension, the evolution of malls, certainly something to keep an eye out for, especially as we head into the new year and this festive period. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the asset manager and general manager at Sandton City, Dimitri Kokinos, for joining us to take a look at what it is that they're doing to enhance the consumer experience. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise. And you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
For the first time in 15 years, South Africa will be receiving a new gold mine. That is because the team at West Wits have announced today that officially Xala Shallows is going to be opening up. We can expect this mine to provide us with quite a significant amount of gold over its life for the next 17 years. For more on this, I'm joined on the line by the Group MD and a CEO at West Wits, Rudy Daisel, to take a look at this and see what you make of it. Rudy, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. I suppose congratulations are in order. Certainly a historic moment for the business. How are you feeling at the moment?
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy, and thank you for having me. No, it's a unbelievable, exciting time for us. It was quite a long road to get to this point. And yeah, we officially started it today. But we actually already brought out our first ore out of the mine in the last week of October. So, yeah, it's a great, great, exciting time for us.
Rudy, tell us about the prospects of the mine. Tell us about the size of the mine, everything from exploration to where we are today. I can imagine it's been quite the journey to get to getting the first ore out. Tell us about what we can expect from the business now that we have crossed that significant milestone.
Yeah, look, so it was quite a long process to get to this point. I mean, we already started mobilizing in July. And like I said, we brought out our first ore. We just completed our first production month under November. And all went quite well in terms of the project. It ran smoothly in terms of the program itself and still on budget. So things are great for us. So the big idea for us now going forward is that we would like to build up to that first pour. We are processing our gold ore at Isilweni plant. And then we are starting off with a stockpile up to 30,000 tons run of mine ore, of which we then will start feeding material into the plant for that first pour. And we expect that in March 2026.
Rudy, tell us about the capacity of the mine over its lifespan. What is the aim to get to when we talk full production and we talk full, I suppose, processing? What is the capacity we're aiming for here?
So the steady state production for us will be around 65,000 run of mine ore. That will produce about 70,000 ounces per annum. Now, that buildup will be up to over 3 years when we hit that steady state point. And then we will have a life of mine of 17 years of this particular mine. Now, this is really just the start of what we call our West Wits Basin project, because we do have aspiration to actually build our project up to around 200,000 ounces per annum. So that will then basically start up over time, and we still need to do some feasibilities on that. But the most important thing is that we would like to walk before we run, and Xala Shallows is exactly that. We'll start it up, And from there on, we will build up and in a phased approach and get up to what we believe we can actually produce.
Certainly a good time to be getting into gold mining with the gold price at its current levels. But I can imagine, given that this is a 17 and a half year mine project, that wasn't the only reason. Rudy, take us through the plans from a Westwits point of view. At a group level, I can imagine the business is not just looking at this as a singular project. Take us through what else the group is working on.
Yeah, so we are on a point now that we started Dollar Shallows and we actually have a revenue created business, creating business. And the plan now is to do some studies in what we call our Project 200, like I just mentioned. And we've also got some plans to start with some exploration work in our mining right area, which is about 1,800 hectares big in the specific area. There's a resource of about 5 million ounces available. And this Dollar Shallows only takes out 1 million ounces over its life of mine. So obviously there's a lot more resources to be mined. And the idea now is to start with those studies to get that project up and running, and as well as the exploration work. So then we are going to expand much quicker or much bigger than what we've currently got in Dollar Shallows.
Rudy, any export plans from a gold perspective? Any offtake agreements that we can look at or speak to at the moment?
Yes. So we've got a signed and executed agreement with Sibanye-Stillwater. So this project is quite unique in the sense that we do not have our own plant. We actually got a toll treatment agreement with Sibanye-Stillwater at their Isilweni plant. It's about 40 kilometers away from our mine. You know, that obviously had a lot of upside in terms of the amount of capital that is required for this project. But ultimately, if we want to get into that Project 200, we would need to look at our own plant. So that's the idea. But look, yeah, it's going through Sibanye-Stillwater and then through Rand Refineries. And this is how our processing agreement actually works.
Sometimes it's really nice to have gold in your backyard, as evidenced by Dollar Shallows. All the best to you and the team. Rudy, we wish you guys all the best of success and may you make the most of this latest gold rush. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much. That was Rudy Daisel, the Group Managing Director and CEO at Westwits, joining us to discuss the new gold mine that opened up in South Africa for the first time in 15 years.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP. 46669. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa. And we are into the fourth Saturday of December for some people. For some people, it still is a Thursday out there. But nevertheless, we are very much in the festive period, even if the weather doesn't agree with us. And in that time, it's important to remember that enjoying and celebrating the festive season is to be done responsibly. I'm joined on the line by the Director for Corporate Affairs at SAB, Barbara Kopilovici, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Barbara, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. This is typically a very happy time. For some, it's time to let go. For some, it's time to wind down and let go of the year that was. And for some, it is to celebrate. We typically celebrate a lot in this time. Let's look at just the importance of doing that, but doing it responsibly.
Thank you, Jimmy. And indeed, it is a time of celebration. And that's why we need to make sure we do it the right way. And we see it as our role, you know, as South African breweries also to give that guidance to our consumer and our stakeholders. So, yeah, that's a role that SAB would also lead. And how we do it from our side is that We really make sure that we provide the right education and insights to the consumer to understand what responsible good looks like, because, you know, it can be a very subjective notion. What is, you know, what is moderation for you, or what is moderation for me, without the right guidance can be a very different story. So making sure that, you know, the knowledge is where is accessible and understood. And we also need to support, you know, the enforcement leg to make sure that, you know, the rules are respected in trade, whether it's making sure that, you know, no underage person has access to alcohol, or that, you know, already intoxicated people are not further enabled, and making sure that, as you say, it remains, you know, overall a moment of celebration, and not that the celebration ends because of the wrong behaviors.
Now, Barbara, you touched on the role that SAB plays in this. And I mean, I know of initiatives like the SAB Sharp initiative, but that's not the only initiative that SAB has in place. It's not the only one that SAB's put in place over the 130 years that the business has been in existence. Take us through just some of the other interventions and other measures that the business has done, understanding, of course, the environment that you operate in and the responsibility it places on you as an organization.
So I think SIB Sharp, Jimmy, has become a bit of the umbrella brand where all, even our legacy initiative, are now sitting under. And I think the two that I would really call out in terms of, you know, things that have had already a meaningful impact and that we're looking to enhance further is, one, you know, we realize that we have a unique access to the retailers, you know, to the point of consumption in the trade. And, you know, those can be forces for good. And we've really had an intentional initiative about creating a responsible trading program. And over the last 5 years, we've year on year audited and incentivized 24,000 retailers to be better champion of responsible consumption in our communities. And we've seen a massive, massive evolution. When we started, we had 21% of compliance, meaning of people that really takes responsible consumption seriously, you know, and champion it. And we're now sitting at 90%. I wish I could tell you 100, but unfortunately, we're not yet there. But that has been one massive transformation. And we look at using this platform to create new changes within our trade. How do we make sure that we don't see illicit alcohol that's becoming a health hazard in that space? And the second one that I would call out is our partnership with law enforcement to deter drink driving, where if you go on the road, you might see those little trucks where you get tested, and you'll be very surprised to see the logo SAB on them, because to date, we've actually delivered them 32 vehicles to enable over 50,000 drink driving arrests. So SAB is really in partnership with the police to make sure that, you know, no one that tests our product or any alcoholic products takes the road. And those are really the two initiatives that I would say, you know, are the most impactful when it comes to shaping a better drinking culture in South Africa.
Speaking of that drinking culture in South Africa, Barbara, you mentioned that you work closely with law enforcement, and I think sometimes it's best to hear this straight from the source. We hear all the time that law enforcement always promotes that people should be drinking responsibly, should not be drinking and driving, but from an SAB perspective, from the company that manufactures the alcohol, what would your message be to South Africans over this festive period, understanding that, of course, it is important to ensure that everybody does stay safe. How would you want people to enjoy this festive period responsibly?
I think the first very easy one is just remembering at all time, none for the road, right? Even one is not good, even if regulatory wise, it might be okay. But the moment you have a sip of alcohol, you're actually impairing your capacity to drive. So I would say, just if you're planning to drink alcohol, just don't drive and organize an e-hailing services or equivalent. But that's my first message. And then just to note that it's considered as binge drinking or excessive drinking, where you have more than four drinks in 2 hours. And I think people don't always know that, because it's, you know, in times of celebration, you can quickly get there. So just remember, when you open that fourth drink, that this should be the limit, you know, at within 2 hours. So I just hope that the listener can just remember those two things, and I think we'll have the best celebration this festive season for all of us.
None for the road, folks. Please do not drink and drive. Please consume alcohol responsibly this festive period. That is the message from the team at South African Breweries. That is the message they have been celebrating throughout the year as they reflect on 130 years in operation in South Africa. We'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Director of Corporate Affairs at SAB, Barbara Kopilovici, for joining us to take a look at responsible consumption and enjoying the festive season responsibly. This interview was brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer, it's brewing hope. It's brewing dreams.
It's brewing a legacy. For over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls. To brew moments that matter, that bring us together. For you, for the next generation. For 130 years and forever, SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp, not for persons under the age of 18.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply. It's SME of the Week time, and we love this segment. I love this segment. I don't think that there is a better opportunity than showcasing some of South Africa's small businesses to you, our SAFM community, and hopefully helping you unearth some of these wonderful gems. This week's SME is exactly one such gem. I stumbled upon this business recently. I've tried their products, and I love just the concept of the business. The business is called Tuck Box, and that's all I'm going to say about the business, because the founder and CEO of the business, Limor Esakov, joins me on the line now to take a look at her business and how she built it. Limor, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about Tuck Box. Tell us about where it came from and how you built this business.
So I was in professional services. I had a graphic design creative services agency, and we were seeing a lot of clients in our office, and I was spending a lot of time in the office, and we had very little interesting, wholesome, well-packaged snacks on hand. It was always a scramble before meetings to, we'd run to Woolies and get a bag of biscuits or something, you know, and it was always presented a bit shabby, you know what I mean? And I just thought that there was a gap in the market in terms of well-presented, individually portioned, hygienic, interesting, wholesome snacks in the workspace. So I left creative services and I started this business from scratch. We started our own packaging and manufacturing facility. And we grouped together all kinds of interesting ingredients like yogurt-coated cashews, yogurt-coated mango. We have wasabi peanuts. We have we were importing quite a lot of interesting things, trialing salted broad beans and things like that, just to keep it exciting. We also have some very interesting names for our products. Just sort of livens up a meeting space. They're very well packaged, individually packaged, and they present quite beautifully in a branded display box. And that branded display box lives in your boardroom, and we replenish those snacks on a monthly basis or on an ad hoc basis. So you have the stash of wholesome snacks ready to display in your boardroom. And because they just display so well, it lent itself to gifting. So we started packaging our snacks in various sized wooden gift boxes that again also carry either a branded lid or a fully personalized lid sort of made out to the recipient, comes in a variety of different sizes there. And hotels. Hotels became a big market for us as well. Welcome amenities, departure gifts, mini bars, things like that. So we found ourselves in quite a few 5-star establishments around Joburg. And that's where we started, and that's where we were growing. COVID was a bit of a curveball for us, actually a big curveball. We were servicing hotels and boardrooms primarily. Towards the end of 2019, things were looking really good. And then COVID hit, and we went into a bit of a stumble for a while. But we were lucky to survive that. And yeah, that's where we are.
Limor, what have you enjoyed most about building this business?
it's very rewarding to have an idea and to see it come to life. And to also, because the team is so small, picking up the phone and saying, hi, it's Limor from Tuckbox, and this is what we do, and can I send you a sample? And sending out a sample and then getting orders off the back of that, and like actually generating revenue from what feels like nothing, you know, just what feels like what was thin air, and you generate revenue from that. It's a very, very exciting feeling. It's a very optimistic feeling. You feel like, well, you can create things, you can make things happen, you can move things, you know, and it's a very empowering feeling. I have been in a position sort of as a salaried employee, and sometimes you feel quite disempowered, you know, you just think, well, you're going to get paid what you're going to get paid. But it's amazing when all the power, it's amazing and also difficult, very difficult at times, to feel that you have that full control to really maximize revenue and maximize your earnings as much as possible. So that's been very exciting. And also the team, empowering my team and training them and teaching them and learning from each other, watching people growing around you is also has also been extremely rewarding.
Limor, take me through the personalization of the packaging. I mean, it's quite a unique way to present what people would otherwise consider just snacks. You've done something a little more than just present it. You've put it all together quite nicely. Everything's individually wrapped, as you mentioned. But just take me through what inspired that and how that allows you to be very unique in the market that you play in.
So I always found in a work environment, when you're sitting around a boardroom and you get like a little packet of nuts and you've got to stick your hand into the packet and there's crumbs and there's salt and you're, you know, all that kind of thing. I love the idea of a rigid tray, which is what we have. It's a PET rigid tray. So you peel back the film and it's quite a sort of a dignified little tray of a snack. You know what I mean? And you've got this little plate built in a way, and it just feels very dignified and premium, you know what I mean? Especially in that context. I mean, obviously, if you're lying on the couch and you're eating a bag of Doritos, that's a very different story. But in a work context, I just found that the snacks that are in those little packets just always, they were quite jarring. I remember also going to a law firm once and they're charging the earth per hour, but then they served this tray of biscuits in the middle that they had wrapped with cling wrap around it, like layers and layers of cling wrap. And then the lady was like peeling back the cling wrap. And I just thought it was so jarring. It just wasn't in sync with the brand of the business. And I wanted our snacks to be very elevated. And the individual portion also, I found that sometimes people will take a snack and they will leave the meeting. They won't actually eat the snack in the meeting. But then in the car, on their way home or back to the office from that meeting, you have this little snack that sort of stays with you. And you eat it in the car. And sort of like a little gift from the business that you just visited. You know, sometimes I feel that a lot when people give you a bottle of water, you know, and you don't finish the water there and then. But then it stays with you for the next hour along your day. And just because of the way that it's packaged, it can do that. Also, the film is printed. We print directly onto the film, which we're very proud to say. I mean, I haven't seen anyone in South Africa that's printing directly on the film. It's quite an exercise, but we chose to do that again to eliminate unnecessary stickers and unnecessary. We just wanted to keep it very clean and very premium. So there was a lot of thought that went into absolutely every single detail around the actual snack tray. And then the presentation in the wooden boxes. So the wooden boxes come in a variety of different sizes, and each box has got a lid that slides in and out, and that lid can either be printed again directly on the lid. We try to steer away from stickers and vinyls and things like that. So we print directly onto the lid, and in the print run, we can incorporate the name of the recipient. So, you know, we usually personalize off of a spreadsheet, and then we can say, dear Jimmy, what a pleasure being on your show today. And, you know, I can actually personalize a whole sentence and print that on the lid. So it lends itself really well to not just year-end gifting and things like that, but also conferencing and stuff like that.
Limor, where do people get hold of the business? If someone's looking to try out the products, someone's looking to see what the product looks like, give us all of the information around that, your website, your social media handles, all of that information.
So we are www.tuckbox.co.za. That's our website. And you can reach us on info@tuckbox.co.za. Sadly, our Instagram went a bit quiet. Being a startup bootstrapped entity, it's hard to find budget for all the different things. So we had social media running quite well, and then it's kind of quietened down. And now we have to find an agency to help us to bring it back to life. We are on Instagram @tuckbox.sa, but it's not the most active space. So the best is probably the website and our email.
If you're looking to personalize your Christmas gift, looking to personalize your corporate gifting, or just looking for some really high quality snacks, reach out to the team at Tuckbox. They'll have you sorted and they will have the best quality available for you. I think we'll leave the conversation on that note. All the best to you and your business, Limor. That was Limor Esakov, the founder and CEO of a Tuckbox, that is tuckbox.co.za, joining us for this week's SME. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, 46669. T's and C's apply.
That's the show for today, folks. It's coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Host is standing by to give us the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. From my side, good night.